Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Gentlemen, how are we feeling today?
Feeling not bad. Oh. Not bad. The sun is still shining.
I can't believe it. It's been one heck of a spring, hasn't it? Like, we've lucked out.
What did we say when we first started doing this podcast back September, October? It's like, how are you doing? Well, it's raining again.
I remember complaining a lot about the weather. I remember complaining about how hot it was, too. Because back then, of course, we were in like tank tops and whatnot, too. But it did get cold and it's a little chilly, but it's definitely nice out. And
my toesies are cold.
Let me say this. When did we get to that age where we could start complaining or talking about the weather as if it's the most exciting thing in the world?
Get off my lawn!
Yes, I feel like we're of that age now where we can complain about these type of things. But I digress. We do have a podcast to talk about. Before we get into anything, guys, I just have to make one acknowledgement. And that acknowledgement, of course, is the Vancouver Whitecaps have had one hell of a year so far.
That's cool.
Like, probably the most impressive season so far they've ever had in their existence in the MLS.
It's pretty incredible. Just the fact that going to this final game and possibly going to be at BC Place,
yeah.
You know, 55,000 people in there. We all know Vancouver fans love their soccer. We have, like I said, we've got a guy at work. He's got season tickets. He goes over and awesome. Watches every game. He loves That's it. So cool. Just, imagine the energy in that place, right?
This is the year for them.
I've never seen a live soccer game like that, but I've heard there's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like, it's not like going to a hockey game or a football game or a basketball game where you kind of go and you cheer, go, whatever, go. It's like you sing. You're constantly singing, you're dancing, you're cheering. They have songs for the team. It's not like, you know, we would go Leafs, go Canucks, go. They're like singing a song for the Whitecaps, and their fans are called the Southsiders, and it's like it's exciting stuff. And you know, this specific championship they're going for is called the CONCACAF Championship. It's actually not associated with the MLS. It's actually all teams within, I believe, North America. So the team they're playing against is actually from Mexico, and they're playing for this championship. And it's no team in Canada has ever won the CONCACAF championship. I believe the Toronto team came close. They went to the final, but they never won it. And Seattle has won it, but they're, of course, not a Canadian team. So no Canadian team has ever won it.
Right.
So this is Vancouver's chance, and they've got a good enough team that, you know, it's going to be one heck of a game.
Would you say it's kind of like the CHL that way, and how the Memorial Cup is?
Yeah,
like, even though it's all
amalgamate.
It's all in the same country, but there's four different leagues.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of thing, right.
Yeah. They have their own tournament to win their championship, and then the winner of that tournament will play the winner of the other team's tournaments in a separate tournament. And it's I actually enjoy the Memorial Cup for that reason. We used to have the Royal Bank Cup years ago in the BCHL, you'd play the CJHL teams across.
Is that
Canada.
Not around anymore?
Well, BCHL is not associated with the CJHL anymore. So,
that's right.
So they don't play that anymore. But it was fun to kind of have that like that big tournament and have all the teams from around Canada come and play in your barn.
Well, you want to have those teams and those players that inspire the youth to obviously get involved in the game. You know, you look at the Canadian women's team in the Olympics, like they definitely inspired more girls to get into soccer and certainly are considered a powerhouse in the Olympics.
Yeah.
You're looking at teams again for like MLS or even like said the CONCACAF championship. If the Whitecaps can win, that's going to make them more noticeable in Canada. That might inspire more kids, but like, oh, you know, they did big, they did good. That I love playing soccer. Maybe I want to try and be, you know, the next big star for MLS.
I think right now this is kind of the beginning of kind of a big thing for soccer in Canada, specifically in Vancouver, because with the 2026 World Cup, they're going to play games out of BC Place for the World Cup, which is incredible. And from what's going on in the U.S. right now, not to turn things political, but from what's going on in the U.S. right now, there's actually a lot of speculation that they don't want to play games in the U.S. right now with everything. You know, like people are fearing for their safety right now in the U.S.
Well, I hear about flights being canceled for like WestJet and stuff like that to the US.
Exactly. So there's potential that they could play more games in Canada for the World Cup, which is going to put us on the world stage for soccer. So it for me, that's exciting as a soccer fan and a sports fan. But I'm sure like a lot of the people who do cheer for the Whitecaps and cheer for soccer in general, especially Canada soccer, that's going to be an incredible thing to have it play on our soil.
Yeah, I'd love one of these days to go see a game. I've seen, obviously, the games overseas over in England and Europe there, and you know the fans go absolutely nuts. You got stadium crowds of like 100,000 people, and like it's, you know, they're all singing ole ole. It's a bit of a slow game, I find sometimes, but just it's the experience, right?
Yeah.
And I'd love to experience that myself one of these days. I haven't done it yet.
Soccer is a very it's like a chess match. We were talking a few episodes ago about like how you kind of strategize a game like soccer, and it's basically like you go for an attack, and if you feel like you don't have an open lane, you try again. You'll boot the ball back to sort of center field and try again until you can score or the other team takes over. So it is definitely a longer kind of strategic style game. It's kind of like how I compare baseball. Like if you feel that way about soccer, it's kind of like how I feel about baseball when it comes to the sort of analyst's game.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's a very strategized game, right? And I do respect that about baseball too, because as much as it's not for me, like I find it kind of boring, I can watch a baseball game. Like I can go to a baseball game live and enjoy myself. And I understand the aspects of baseball where there is a lot of strategy involved. Soccer is very similar. Like there's a lot, you know, the manager of a soccer team or a football team will basically decide who to play at what point, because they're trying to get to a specific point. Like if they have the lead, say after halftime, they'll do a substitution to make sure they have their best player on, you know, close to the end of the game, so they can try to solidify the win, right? Like those kind of strategies. And it's very similar to like basketball in that way, actually.
Well, you talk about it being a long game. At least in North America sports, is the longest game. It's a 90-minute game.
Yes,
so compared to the other sports we watch, where they're like 48 every now and
then. I mean, extra time. Yeah, like that last game for the Whitecaps that they played against Inter Miami. I believe there was, I want to say 7 minutes of extra time because of like injuries and like, you know, penalties and things like that.
Yeah.
They had to review like two separate plays. It was like a big deal because there was a penalty kick basically that they were going to call for Inter Miami to either tie the game or get a goal to come within one. And they called a review so they could look at the play, and then the referee realized there was no penalty. So they took it away and gave Vancouver the ball back.
Right.
So those are the kind of things that make or play, you know, soccer. As much as we all hate the diving in soccer, it's the worst. A lot of times it does work out for your team if you can get away with it. So
it's an interesting fact. I just was kind of curious because I think back when you were talking about how if you don't like what you're getting from the play you've set, you kind of retreat and try again. Well, there's often times where they're kicking it back all the way to the goalkeeper,
right?
And then the goalkeeper just makes this incredible kick. I was curious because I had no idea how long the field was. It's actually only a max of 120 yards.
Yeah, I think
so. It's the same length, a little bit longer than a football field.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're watching a soccer game, you're like, this field is absolutely massive. It may be because there's less players on it.
That's probably
But not really. It's wider for sure.
It's wider and maybe a little more open. That might have something to do with it.
But so you have 11 players on at a time, right? 10 plus the goalkeeper.
Yes, correct.
And how many are on an offensive
11
line?
11 aside,
yeah.
11 aside. So each team has 11 players.
And how many are on an offensive line?
I want to say, I mean, I'm probably the worst person to ask because I don't actually know, but I'm guessing somewhere like 6, maybe 7.
And then you've got your receivers, running backs.
I think you have your forwards, you have your midfielders, and then you have your defenders. I think is usually how it goes.
In football as the other side of it, how many players are on the field at a time in football?
Like football.
Football.
North American football.
Right. Sorry about the confusion.
So NFL and CFL have two different rules when it comes to the amount of players you can have. So CFL can have 12 players. NFL can have 11 players.
Okay.
The NFL has, like, the Seattle Seahawks, they have the 12th man, which is the fans. CFL can only, if you have 13 men, that's a penalty, right? So, but yeah, ultimately that's the way you look at it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to the way the game is played and it, you know, the camera, the way that, where the camera is and whatnot.
The width I think is huge because it's like, it's like 80 yards wide.
Yeah.
The soccer pitch, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It is impressive when you consider the size of the chessboard you have to play, but, you know, it's a hard game to play too when you consider the fact that you're always moving. Where you look at, say, NFL or football, I should say, or even hockey, you get shifts, right? Yeah. Whereas these guys are always moving. So you get 45 minutes of running constantly, basically, to keep the play going. Yeah. So it can be tiresome for sure. And I think that plays a part in it in terms of how you strategize the game too.
Those orange slices.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, so I'm just excited about the Whitecaps. I think, you know, June 1st is going to be a really fun game to see. And it's a winner-take-all game. So whoever wins that game wins the CONCACAF Championship. I'm really hoping the Whitecaps can pull it off.
And like I said, it's something like big like that, right? It's meant to inspire, and you know, you can look at other sports. Like I said, we had you know, Vince Carter back, obviously, the late '90s and into the 2000s, that inspired all of our Canadian players now that have made it into the NBA. You got, you know, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's possibly going to be the MVP this year.
Wow!
And you know, put Toronto basketball on the map, and certainly it's something that, you know. Yeah, they just played it their season. We could certainly talk a bit about them and see how they did.
I'm laughing because you know what didn't put Canadian basketball on the map? The Toronto Raptors. Yeah.
Not this year.
The only Canadian team? Yeah, that's true. They've had a pretty rough year. Have they ever drafted first overall?
They did, yeah. Andrea Bargnani.
Oh, right. He was first overall.
Yep. The Italian stallion, I guess.
He was great. I really liked him on the Raptors. It was sad when they traded him away.
Yeah, he never lived up to that hype. That stardom moniker. Like, he had shooting skills, but he had a lot of areas in his game that he lacked a lot.
I think he was one of the first big men to really start shooting longer range on a consistent basis.
I would give that to Dirk Nowitzki over him. And Dirk
but Dirk Nowitzki didn't play center that often, though, did he? I thought he was more of
it's the same with Bargnani. Bargnani was back and forth between center and power
forward. Fair enough.
I would give that to Dirk over Bargnani.
Yeah.
The fact that Ujiri was able to get a first-round pick for Bargnani in a trade was crazy, at least towards the end of his career there.
Fair enough.
Raptors, it was their 30th anniversary season this year, so they came into the league in 95. Hmm.
With the Grizzlies.
Yeah, along with the Grizzlies. Yeah, and it was an odd year. They weren't necessarily expected to do good. They had an odd year in terms of their wins and their losses. They went on stretches of like 7 straight losses, stretches of like 5 straight wins, had a stretch of 11 straight losses where they were kind of set to, you know, set in terms of the draft draft odds to get a higher pick, and towards the end of their season that kind of collapsed where they're no longer in line for the first overall. You know, depends on, you know, what happens obviously at this point when it comes to the draft lottery. We'll see obviously as that falls into place. I'd love for them to get the top prospect. Cooper Flagg is supposed to be unreal.
Cooper Flagg. What an interesting name.
Yeah, you like it with his last name.
Flagg. Okay.
They seemed to put it together at the end of the season, though. Like, they had some really good chemistry at the end of the season, the Raptors.
Reminds me of the Canucks a little bit. You know, you end up being like one of the worst teams in the league. You're thinking, great, here comes first overall pick. We're going to start winning instead. Yeah.
Is there any sport in the world where you can have a rebuild turnaround quicker than in basketball?
I don't think there is, actually.
Probably not, so, right? I mean, the Raptors were championship team in 2019.
Yep.
They had two more decent years.
Decent years.
After that. And then that's been it since, say, 2021, right? For the last 4 years, they've been terrible.
Yeah.
Essentially terrible, right?
Yeah.
But with some of the players that they've shipped out, They've really got some capital and some draft picks and the people they have drafted with some of those picks already. Their future looks bright.
Yeah.
But it's when is that going to step going to take? Because yeah. Think about it. You play five players at a time.
There's nothing fun about cheering for a team that's on the downswing. And, you know, you just wonder how long that downswing is going to last for the Raptors. I'm not a big basketball fan, but you know, I cheered for them in 2019 when they won the championship. It was incredible. I was sad to see, what's his name?
Oh, Kawhi.
Kawhi. I was sad to see Kawhi Leonard leave. I thought, man, if he sticks around, they could win another one. And then he ended up leaving, of course, for LA. So it was definitely sad to see. They need to find somebody like that, somebody who can build the team up and keep them going.
They might have found that. Obviously, Scottie Barnes has been considered awesome in that regards. Like he's been a bit stagnant in his development, I'd say, the last 2 years here, where he still has so much potential and he will probably still be considered a superstar. At least that's what Ujiri says about him in the media. But they made that deal for Brandon Ingram at the deadline, and he didn't play this year just because of his injury, but he's that kind of on cusp, almost like superstardom. He's got the talent, he's got the skill, his biggest thing is he's just got to stay healthy. And they acquired him for the same way they did with Kawhi, kind of pennies on the dollar. Like Kawhi was DeRozan, Pirtle, and I think it was a first round pick. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same with Ingram. Like he's the type of player that could have been required for multiple first round picks, and they didn't have to give up all that much to get him because a bit of his injuries, but because he's got the talent, might as well.
Yeah.
There has been rumors that he's not super great in the room, though, either.
I've heard
so
that, too.
So, I guess it's kind of a gamble. I mean, maybe it's the fit that he's had before or whatever the case may be. Maybe it'll be different. I mean, I'm not sure how old he is off the top of my head, but coming into a very young Raptors team, maybe it'll be different. Who knows?
What you hope for as a Raptors fan is that he clings on to a relationship with somebody on the team where they become buds, and that's what builds the team up, right? Because really, that's what it comes down to. It's just a matter of making sure that you can build a friendship or a kinship with somebody on the team that kind of keeps everybody together, you know, like maybe Barnes, for example.
Yeah. And well, like I said, as I mentioned with kind of them having kind of their up and down season, like I said, they had that stretch of 11 straight losses. They had a stretch of 5 straight wins and so on. Certain players have already started to kind of shine for them. A guy that wasn't expected to do much, at least as a backup, but kind of was able to take over the backup role as Jamal Sheed this year. He became definitely like a 3-and-D kind of player, like where he can shoot the three-point ball with consistency at around 38%, especially in the last 10 games he was able to do that. He's kind of almost made Emmanuel Quickly somebody that's expendable if they wanted to go out and try to acquire another star. With the cost of Quickly's contract, they technically could, with Jamal Sheed kind of having even better shooting capability than Quickly does.
Quick note on that shooting percentage: 3-point percentage at 38% in today's NBA is actually pretty stellar.
Yeah,
because of how many they take.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. It's gone up so exponentially. Like, thanks a lot, Steph Curry.
That's true.
Steph Curry is one of my favorite NBA players.
Oh, he's fun to watch, man. Yeah. He's fun to watch.
Hard not to cheer for that guy.
You know, as it is right now, I'd love for them to jump up in the draft, whether it is Cooper Flagg or there's a bunch of prospects we could probably talk about, but Cooper Flagg is obviously the prize. I'd love him on the team. He would fit kind of, if you're kind of ringing down the line in terms of the team, you could have Cooper Flagg as your center, or even Pirtle, Flagg as your power forward, Ingram as your small forward. You could have Barnes as your shooting guard, or even your point guard, because he's known to be a pass first kind of player.
Yeah.
And RJ Barrett as the shooting guard, possibly. Like, you could start actually getting some powerhouse ability with that team.
I mean, it feels like with that kind of statement, like it feels like they may not be that far away from being a good team again. It's just a matter of acquiring the right players.
Yeah.
Much like a hockey team, but I mean, ultimately, it's just a matter of making sure you have the right players to go alongside, like complementary players in the end.
Do you have any notes on kind of the bracket so far in the NBA? I was just kind of looking at some of them, and one thing that sticks out for me that I'm noticing here with the two conferences in the NBA is that the East just is dominant. Like, I'm just looking at these. There was a Game 7 in the Western Conference, two Game 7s in the Western Conference, one sweep. But in the East, like, one sweep. The next one was 4-1. Then another series was 4-1. Another series was just 4-2. Like they just seem to have an edge right now. I mean, you've got the Thunder though in the West, and then probably. Do you think it's going to be the Thunder and the Cavaliers in the final with the way they're playing right now? Because I don't know. I mean, they're into the. I was moved on a little bit here, and it's like it looks like Indiana's actually up 2-0 on the series with Cleveland right now. But those just seem like two powerhouse teams. Cleveland has had an unreal season.
Yeah,
it's yeah, kind of surprising actually, considering that Cleveland obviously no longer has LeBron. They've been able to build their team since he left. LeBron got kicked out with the Lakers at a 4-1 series loss against Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah. You know, and that's he's 40 or 41 years
41,
old.
41, yeah.
Yeah, like he still wants to play.
He's an old man. he's younger than me.
Definitely at the end of his career. Like he probably might have been smart to go back to Cleveland one more time. But, yeah. You know.
Stay in your lane, Joe. LeBron James plays basketball. We do podcasts.
He plays professional sports. Yeah. That being said, you know, that is a question you can ask. Is like, what will happen with LeBron? Because, like you said, he's not getting any younger. Does he go back to Cleveland? I don't see it happening.
No,
I don't.
Finishing in L.A., I'm pretty sure.
I can see that. I mean, considering, too, his son plays in L.A. He's going to finish with his son, kind of like Gordie Howe.
Yeah, I think his son started actually one or two games near the end of the season there, too.
That's right. They played a game together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, probably a couple of games, I imagine. But
yeah.
But in terms of starting, like I said, Bronny was a second-round pick, so that's not something that you regularly see, unless they obviously develop that way. Maybe Bronny is developing that way. I didn't see much of the Lakers game, so I can't say it on that regards. But, yep. You know, if it's father like son, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Totally.
I think, yeah, probably Cavs and Thunder are a good pick for the finals. You can't count out the Knicks. The Knicks have been pretty stellar this year.
Yeah.
Acquiring KD was huge for them.
That guy's been all over the place.
KD, yeah. Sorry.
All over the place.
All over the place. But he was the first overall pick in his draft. You can't count out talents where even if you're not paying attention as much as, say, certain teams. Yeah, you could see Cavs, Knicks play. You could see Thunder, maybe even the Warriors over the Timberwolves. Can't count out Seth Curry.
Apparently he's battling injury right now, though.
Yeah.
His hamstring's giving him problems.
That's another guy who's probably, you know, his age is catching up to him a little bit, too. He's not old, but, like, he's been playing a long time. He's won a lot of championships. He's
won a lot of, period.
Yeah.
a lot of everything.
And he's played in a lot of championships, and you know, I think him along with LeBron are kind of slowly becoming almost like a new era of GOATs, you know, when you consider the greatest of all time in basketball, period. And, I mean, nobody shoots three-pointers like Steph Curry. I mean,
nobody does.
Nobody.
And nobody might ever shoot like him.
Exactly. Just the form alone, but like the form and the accuracy. The fact that he can shoot from half court, like, with ease.
And, like,
the
release. Turn around and just, like,
shoot it. It's the release.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It
really you talk, if you want to talk in terms of hockey, guys like Ovechkin, the way they release the puck, Austin Matthews, just their style, the way they have made it work for them. Like, Steph Curry, like, you can't defend him because you don't even have time. You don't know if he's going to shoot. All of a sudden, the ball is in the hoop.
That's right.
During DeRozan's draft, guess who was picked just before DeRozan?
Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Of course,
he could have been a Raptor.
Oh, man, his dad was. Why didn't they? Yeah. Man, oh man.
Well, and that's the thing. Like they picked him before the Raptors, right? So they would have had to
didn't
move
have
up,
a choice.
Move
oh,
up.
I see what you're saying.
Unless,
yeah.
Unless they moved up in the draft,
And I would have given up 2 second rounders. And your first round pick to move up the one spot to get.
I would have done it too.
Golden State might have said, "Forget it anyway." They knew they were getting right.
Yeah, they knew what they were getting. Exactly. It's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point.
And DeRozan was by no means like a cinch player. Oh, he was a great player, and he led to us acquiring the player that got us the championship, right? So, like I said, it's a hope that the Raptors will turn this season around next year in terms of, like I said, acquiring Ingram, having that extra star power behind beside Barnes, and like I said, if they make some moves in the offseason, like they've done again New Jersey's not shy to make a move. Like you said, he got Kawhi. If they can acquire another star-studded forward like that, maybe, or guard, maybe they'll have the chops to be a playoff team next year.
My hope is that they get somebody who actually wants to be there.
Yeah.
And somebody that wants to be there, not just 1 year, but, you know, a few years.
Well, that was one of the things with Brandon Ingram. When the acquisition was happening, he said that he wanted to play for Toronto.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was
signed an extension.
Yep.
How long was his extension for?
4 years.
4 years. So he's got a lot of time to prove himself in the end, right? And I think that's the one thing Raptors fans can at least hang their hat on.
You know, their record this year was 30-52, and like I said, they had a god awful record at one point there where they were like 11-40.
Yeah.
And then they went like 19-12 at the end there. If they can flip that around where it's like 52-30, I'm okay with that being kind of a start for them, and then see what happens from there. That's a high record, but with bringing Ingram in, some of the cohesiveness of the team at the end of the season, build off of that chemistry, and then let's see you come out firing next year.
Absolutely.
So the Raptors had an underwhelming season. What about so far a little bit more of an underwhelming season? Out of another Toronto team, and that's the baseball season we're talking about. Oddly, though, it's all doom and gloom, maybe. As a baseball fan, you just want to see the best, right? But it's like they're still third in their division.
Yeah.
But they're just expected to be so much better than they are, and they're losing games like they shouldn't lose games. It's so frustrating. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, the Jays finally locked up Vladdy, so that's out of the picture. Now you don't have to worry about that.
14 years,
a lot of money. That's a lot of dough. But what he's not doing is hitting a lot of homers, hitting a lot of RBIs.
And he's not alone either, right? Like there's other players.
No, that's the whole team. 30th out of 30 teams for home runs this season so far.
And that's their identity. They hit home runs, right? I mean, they're not the Yankees, but that's kind of what they do. They have 7 players on their team that are starters that could probably hit 30-plus home runs a year. And wow. What's going on?
Well, and they brought in Anthony Santander for that reason.
Paid him a dump truckload, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$90 million, I believe, over like 4 or 5 years, years.
Yeah, he's $33 million a season or something. Like it's very close, or 23 maybe.
Now, the Blue Jays opened the season pretty promisingly, didn't they?
Their spring training was good.
Yeah, okay, so ultimately, they had a good spring training. What is the difference? What has changed between the last spring training game and the first game of the regular season?
Well, what you could argue is that the Jays were playing kind of their top-notch lineup through most of spring training, whereas I don't know for sure, but other teams may not have.
I see. Okay.
May not have been, right?
Fair enough.
I mean, having said that, they were the second best team in spring training overall, but really they were still 12-6.
Yeah, and
so, I mean it's
and
not
they were
that
still,
dominating.
And they were still hitting balls, though.
Oh, yeah, they were playing well. They were playing well.
So what's stopping them from hitting balls now?
It's they can't seem to hit when runners are in scoring position. Mm. And that's I have no idea what it is. Maybe there's too much pressure to hit the long ball, even though they can't hit it. They started off the season 12-8, and then they went on a run of 1-9.
Mm.
And they kind of just are flopping back and forth all the time right now. And it's ever since Shapiro and Atkins kind of took over the team, it's been kind of disappointment after disappointment. The times they made the playoffs, they didn't win the playoff games.
Yeah.
The focus on defense is good, but you still have to have an offense. And they were known for their offense when they had Teoscar and they had, I'm trying to think of other players, even before, I guess, before Bichette and all of them. You had Batista and you had
Encarnacion.
That's what I was
Donaldson.
Tulowitzki to a point.
Yep. And, we'll come back to where they're currently at. We had Gurriel. We have Moreno as our prospect. We traded for Bart Varsho. Varsho's been a good player. I've not been a big fan of him since the acquisition, but he's been a decent player. And him coming off of his injury and some of the defensive plays he's made, it's been great to see. But if you're not going to score runs, that defense means absolute crap all.
I remember Vladdy being the most promising prospect when you guys were talking about him coming to play for the for the Jays for the first time, and it's just like, we've got the best hitter, this guy's gonna hit all the home runs.
Yeah.
And then just what happened?
We alluded to it a few episodes ago, but at the same time, he started slow last year.
Yeah.
Right, and then he ended up with like a 329 batting average at the end of the year, which is excellent.
Yeah.
So, you know, he could come out of nowhere and all of a sudden in 10 games he hits 8 home runs right back. You know, it's possible. Baseball's like that, right?
Yeah.
Ebbs and flows. The season is long, 162 games.
Yep.
So
that's
I don't
so
think there's room
by
to
the way. Many games.
It's a lot. Now, I don't think there's time to panic, but it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because like there are players that are playing well, Bichette being an example. He's having a great year so far. In my opinion, offensively. I mean, defensively, he's kind of middle of the pack, I'd say, as far as shortstops go. But Santander, like, by the way, correction on his contract, he's $19 million a year.
Okay.
But wait, this guy looks lost. You see him whiffing at balls. Like, what are you doing, man? And he's a switch hitter. So it's not like a matchup is an issue.
Yeah.
Because you got a right-handed batter, he bats from the left. You got a left-handed pitcher, you bat from the right.
Yeah.
Like, you don't ever have to worry about unfavorable matchups with Santander, but it's not translating to the field. Well, what's, like...
I got a bit of an issue with Schneider, too. He doesn't really make many changes to his lineup and when he needs to start making changes. Like, I kind of liked it at first when they were winning with where they had... I'm trying to remember how the order went. It was, I think, Bichette, Guerrero... Santander and Jimenez. He's kind of been keeping the same lineup and they're not winning now.
Yeah.
It's time to change it up. And there's some changes that he has made, but it's kind of the same old. Santander's not hitting well in the third or fourth spot. If you need to move him down to the sixth to go against a pitcher that's already thrown, say, 30 or 40 pitches in the first, you know, two innings or, you know, like I said, by the time you get to 100 pitches, at least he's on the back end. He still has, you know, a lot of power in his swing, and they got a pitcher who's tired or, you know, relief pitcher who might throw over the plate more where you like to hit it, right? And that's the thing where make the changes, work out the kinks, get back on the train. You have the talent, you just don't seem to have the mindset for the game.
So the underlying statement here when it comes to the Blue Jays is, frustrating start to the season, but there's still time.
Oh, tons of time.
Yeah, lots
of time. You have time in baseball right up to the last 2 weeks,
yeah.
Realistically, yeah. Because you can be a 500 team in baseball and make the playoffs. It really depends on your division.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, right now, the Jays are 16-20. So, I mean, there's been 36 games played. There's 100 and, I don't know when to do the math, 28 games left.
126 more.
126 games left.
My goodness.
So,
my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost 100 games more than what they've already played just now left. So, yeah.
It's a long summer. Lots of time to be played.
Yeah. Maybe they need to bring in some of their old all-star talent, you know, to help kind of get their mindset. I personally think the Jays, it's a mind thing that's holding them up. Because the talent's there. I don't question the talent of the team. But it seems to be that they can't seem to put it together every year for the last couple of years now.
Maybe they need to go out as a group and just go have some fun. Go play paintball.
Or you could argue maybe that's all they do. Maybe that's probably
maybe
too.
That's it.
Right? A lot of people know.
After all.
Yeah. A lot of people know Vladdy, George Springer, those guys, they like to have a lot of fun, right? Yeah. And I mean, who knows? Maybe it's too much fun. We don't know. We're just
speculation.
Coming into a game sauced.
But I mean, another example about the Jays is that Max Scherzer's not pitching.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he's 40.
Two, I believe.
40-13. I don't know how old he is. He's really, 40-13. Really old. 40-13. And they signed him. They gave him a boatload of money, too. And he's pitched two games?
One
game?
Yeah.
He's got thumb problems. Well, that's a big deal when you're a pitcher, right?
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
Things like that, you're kind of like, you sign this guy. You didn't sign other players. Because you had an opportunity to sign this veteran guy who's proven he's a strikeout pitcher. He's got nasty stuff. He's won a million games in his career. And then, like, his thumb hurts.
I mean, we go back. We can go back to the offseason when Paul was talking about his frustrations with the Blue Jays office not doing anything.
Well, going after the big fish and losing
and
out
then losing
every single
out
time.
Every single time.
Every single time.
I mean, and then you sign a guy like Scherzer, you're thinking, oh, finally, a good signing, and then you don't play him.
Yeah,
yeah, like he was injured most of last year, so he only got a $15 million contract.
Yeah.
When he was in his prime, he was worth like $45 million a year, of course, yeah. kind of thing. So they kind of knew that
they
were...
I mean, aren't
we all?
Yeah, exactly. When am I going to hit my prime, boys? Yeah. When is it coming?
They kind of knew what they were getting in regards to like him having the injury issues last year, but I guess they were hoping that he was rehabilitated. And They have strong starting pitching, but it has been inconsistent at least for the last calendar year and a half.
And then, like you say, hitting has been the major issue.
And it's like I said, I really do think it's a mindset thing. I think there's got to be a way to calm them down. And you know, like I said, you don't have to go for the big swing. It's nice to get the big swing, but really, like, just try to make contact.
Yeah.
Once you're comfortable with your contact, then you can start. You'll start knowing where you feel comfortable on where the pitches are being thrown, and you can make the big swing when that pitch is right there, or you can hold off because you've been able to read the play at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the Jays won the division in 2015, their team was the definition of clutch. That's any time they needed a big hit, they were getting it.
Yeah.
And this Jays team just doesn't. They're last in their division for runs scored.
Yeah.
And that's not that much difference. I think there's 7 runs scored difference between them and the next closest. But they've had 127 runs scored and 166 runs against.
Wow.
So I mean, they're not coming up with the timely hitting. They get on base
a lot. They do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they're just, you know, the running is in scoring position stats over the last 3 seasons. You don't look, man. Don't look at them, Joe.
I won't. Don't worry.
I know you won't, but
something's got to give,
yeah.
right?
At some point. Give. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about Schneider too, and I've kind of gotten to the point where I don't think he's a bad coach. I just don't. Maybe I do think he's
maybe
a bad
not the
coach.
Right coach. He might not be the right coach for the team.
He just I don't know. He doesn't seem to make the right decisions.
No.
I'm not a baseball expert. I don't coach in the MLB.
Yeah.
But you just think weird things. Like bringing in a pitcher at a certain point in the game when, you know, actually here, I'll give you an example. I was watching a game fairly recently where Barrios was pitching into the 7th inning. Right? And it's like, why? You're up by 4 runs, you know, get in a relief pitcher, someone who's going to shut down the game. I know that they've been using their bullpen a lot because they haven't been scoring runs and other teams have. Mm-hmm. But, like, that game, I can't remember if they won or lost, but the team they were playing got back into the game. And it's like, and it all, where's that decision-making coming from? There was no runs scored in the game up until that point by the opposing team. And your team is up by 4 or 5, and you leave him in there after the 7th inning. Like, Barrios is a great pitcher,
but
all it takes is 4 pitches, and that game could be tough. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
It doesn't take much.
Well, relief pitching has been a bit of an inconsistency for the Jays for decades at this point, I have to say. You know, Hoffman's been a good signing. He's been really, really good in his appearances. Everyone else has been kind of great for a game or two, and then they're not great for the next 3 games, then great for a game, then it's kind of just it's a constant wave happening with this team in terms of their consistency.
Swanson, who they got, was that the Teoscar deal in Seattle?
Yeah, it was Swanson and Adam Macko, I believe, was the other
player. So Swanson is a great relief pitcher, but he can't stay off the IL either. He's on it right now, I think, for the second time. So I don't know.
I tell you what, boys, if they had a team, a professional baseball team in Vancouver, I probably would watch more baseball, to be honest. I probably would. I'll never forget when Vancouver got an NBA team, I was obsessed with the NBA. They left Vancouver, I stopped watching. I stopped caring. I care more about NBA now, but I'm talking about when I was a kid, you know?
Your wife's a big basketball fan, though.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about when I was a kid, though.
Right, like, yeah.
When the Grizzlies were here... I was obsessed with the Grizzlies. I watched every single game. For me, it was exciting. Whether they won or lost, it was just cool to have an NBA team in Vancouver. I would love to see that again in Vancouver. But I would also love to see an MLB team in Vancouver. I think it'd be really cool to have.
The fan base is there whenever there's a Blue Jays series in Seattle. Yeah. There's
you just need the stadium. You know, I don't think they could play out of BC Place. I feel like you could, but... you would probably lose CFL football in that stadium.
Yeah, like you'd probably have to create a new stadium. And the fan base is there. Like I said, when we went to go see Seattle a couple of years ago, I would say 3/4 of the crowd were Blue Jays fans.
We're from BC. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be incredible.
And if not 3/4, probably more than half. Definitely more than half, for sure.
What do you think it would take to start a team in Vancouver? I mean, to expand a team. I mean, you know, we've talked about hockey teams being expanded, of course. You're looking at about $1 billion, $2 billion, maybe even now, to create a new NHL team. What would it take, do you think, to create a MLB team in BC?
Well, considering the size of the stadium, probably has about 50,000 seats at least.
Well, BC Place, you're looking at 57,000 if you're not adding or removing anything.
Yeah. If they had to create a new stadium, obviously there's a big price tag for that. But yeah, just even for an expansion franchise, considering like the MLB is probably one of the highest grossing revenue teams in all of major sports. I wouldn't be surprised. Double that, you know, probably a $4 billion.
$4 billion. I was going to say, what's the franchise fee for NHL is $1 billion?
It was like $1 to $2 billion.
So I just looked it up. The MLB expansion fee is $4 billion.
Four.
You were right. There you go. You were right on the
money. What about NBA? Out of curiosity. I'm guessing the NBA is around the same, like probably, $4 billion.
I'd probably say around maybe around the same as the NHL, just based upon the size of the court and everything else.
It says $4 to $6 billion.
Yeah. Wow. The reason why I thought that is because of the TV deal that NBA has. Like, you're looking at, you know, a similar cost to the MLB based on that alone. But yeah, that would be incredible, man. I would love to see that again.
Yeah.
It's so funny when you consider back in 95 when Toronto and Vancouver expanded to the NBA, it was like, you don't think about what it took to get those teams there, right? And how quickly it became a thing. You know, it's not as easy now to just say any millionaire can create a team in Vancouver and bring it there. It's going to take like MLSE, that corporate funding to make it happen, I think.
Well, times are different now than obviously they were like 30 years ago. I remember I watched that documentary that they had on Sportsnet about the Raptors. And when they first came into the league, they were playing in the Sky Dome and they had like bleacher seats that they put up on one side and they had the Sky Dome seats on the other side. And that was their first season, was playing in the Sky Dome. It was the stupidest setup in the planet.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You wouldn't see that now. There's no sports team that would do something like that. So
it's comparable to like what the NHL was doing for Arizona, playing out of a university, you know, rink just to have a rink. Right. And so now, and we look at it, we're like, this is ridiculous. You'll never see that again, I don't think. I mean, I don't think you'll ever see that.
I'm with the fact that, I mean, Montreal,
the Expos.
There should be
was an Expos fan back in the day.
Me too.
Yeah, I definitely.
I mean, and if you think about the economy and the size of Vancouver and where it is, being a port city. And, you know, there are so many industries that...
It's the third largest city, third largest sort of...
Metropolis
in Canada. When you look at the kind of surrounding communities that all make up part of Greater Vancouver, it's like, I want to say something like 3 to 4 million people live there. Whereas Toronto, of course, is the largest, and then Montreal is the second largest.
Yeah.
Vancouver itself as a city is actually one of the smaller populations.
Yeah,
it's like 600,000 or something like that. Nanaimo, ironically, where we live, I looked this up the other day, this is what's interesting, but where we live, Nanaimo is actually larger than a lot of cities that have like Abbotsford. It's like more population than Abbotsford. Abbotsford has an AHL franchise.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of a funny tidbit.
AHL are thriving in Nanaimo.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But actually, speaking of expanding, just wanted to touch base on this. I hope you don't mind we move off of basketball and our baseball for 1 second.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking previously before about the PWHL, Vancouver having an expansion franchise, the Vancouver PWHL team. We don't know what they're going to be called yet. But we just found out recently, of course, Seattle is also getting a team, and it's been made official as well.
Yeah.
So there's going to be two expanded franchises, now 8 teams in the PWHL. So that's exciting stuff, getting pro women's hockey. Vancouver still, I believe, I haven't heard this about Seattle yet, but I believe Vancouver's the only franchise to have their own rink. So they're not sharing with anybody else.
Sure.
I think Seattle will be playing at a Climate Pledge Arena.
Most importantly, though, another team in the West.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when the Eastern teams come out, they're not just going to go to Vancouver and then go back again.
Yeah.
It's going to be,
I mean, Alberta must be following suit pretty soon, you'd think.
I would think eventually.
At least with one team.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe not even just Alberta, but like maybe also we may look at Winnipeg. We may look at maybe another Quebec team. You never know.
Yeah.
Or even an Ottawa. Well, we already have Ottawa. What am I talking about? But, you know, there could be other teams that we see. Maybe even like
Regina that, or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, like a know? Team that's yeah. not sort of what you would call a traditional
for
market.
Sure. For sure.
That could be really interesting. And I mean, other American markets too.
Maybe Victoria.
It's cool. Possible. I mean, when you consider the when you consider the population of Vancouver Island, totally possible.
Well, I think the Q Center, if it's still called that, maybe the Q Center in Victoria?
In Victoria? Yeah.
Is it called, it's called the Q Center?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the capacity is almost 5,000.
They could play out of Save On Foods Memorial Center too.
Like right. Yeah. Save On. Yeah, that's right too.
That's around 5,000.
Yeah.
I think the Q Center is
I was thinking of Save On.
The Q Center is where the Victoria Grizzlies play. They are, I think, around 2,200 or so.
Oh, I see. So that's smaller than our rink here in Nanaimo.
Yeah, cuz our is. Capacity in terms of capacity. Yeah.
I'd have to wonder with obviously because it's a brand new franchise whether you know their team could poach like a Jessica Campbell from the Kraken to be their head coach, right? You know,
entirely possible. I also wouldn't be surprised if other NHL teams who are looking for coaches right now could do the same.
Yeah,
who knows? We'll see. I think they would probably want her to coach professionally, maybe in the AHL or like you say, the PWHL first to get her that head coaching experience. But it's pretty cool to have that kind of diversity in the league anyway.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. So I just thought it was sort of a fun thing to talk about because we're starting to see expansion in women's hockey. And I would love to see, and we're actually starting to see expansion in women's soccer as well. We've got the Vancouver Rise, which is a professional women's soccer team too, along with the Whitecaps. So it's like more and more women's professional sports is happening. And I think that's really, really great for kids out there to see, right? I think more than anything, just to have, like my daughter can watch TV now and see women's sports have something to strive for even. Yep. So it's pretty exciting stuff. Gentlemen, I think now is a perfect time to talk about our entertainment aspect of the show. For those of you at home who don't know, we talk a lot about sports, but we also talk about movies because we're big movie buffs here. Today, we're going to talk about found footage films. I think before we get into it, though, Paul, maybe you can sort of explain to the audience what we're talking about when we talk about found footage films.
The idea basically behind found footage films, it's supposed to give that that look that it's authentic, that it's real, that it's, you know, what you're watching is something that actually happened.
Or at least it appears that way.
And it's the idea of almost like a first person view. Somebody's holding the camera and you're watching things happen as that the camera person is experiencing it. It's a fun type of film to watch because you feel more engaged, I guess, maybe with the film itself. It's a fun genre of film.
The first one I can think of just that I remember seeing in my past is the Blair Witch Project.
I actually think technically that was the first one of its kind.
Maybe,
the first one ever
they've done. It's definitely a unique way of kind of creating a film, not only a film, but a story in general. Like how do you have a beginning, middle, and end with found footage, really. It's like, oh, we found these reels and then we decided to edit it all together to make it look like a film. But I thought they did a really, really good job with that one specifically because I remember it scared the crap out of me.
It scared the crap out of everyone, Joe.
I never saw it.
You never saw it?
To this day, you've never seen it?
Seriously?
Really? Wow.
I challenge you to watch it. I do. But, turn off the lights, be by yourself, and watch it now, and I'm very curious how you'll react to it as an adult.
I think maybe like it would have scared the crap out of me 20 years ago, knowing that it's the this type of film is the way that it is now. I'm kind of like, oh, yeah.
I don't know, man. It still would scare me.
I'll tell you right now. My buddy has a side by side, and we decided last year to go out. I think it was like October or something like that, and we went out. Yeah, it was October actually, because we did it on purpose because it's the month of Halloween. And we went out the back roads behind Benson. We went up to a little isolated spot. We had our iPad and we had the movie downloaded and we watched it out in the woods with like nobody around. Like, it's still creepy, man.
Did you hear children laughing?
Oh,
in the distance?
Don't even, Joe. I definitely, when you get out to take a pee, you're like, hey, man, you're coming with me.
I'll say this. Like, I don't know if you watch a lot of YouTube, but like there are like an entire niche of videos out there where people go camping and they have the weirdest stuff happen to them while they're camping.
I've seen some of those.
And that's basically where it all stems from is the Blair Witch Project. You know, you think about that, and I'm not going to give too much away, but that tent scene where like you hear noises outside your tent and then all of a sudden it's just like
something happens.
Yes. And it's scary as hell. I tell you, like, it's not real. We all know this.
Yeah.
But at the time, we really thought it was. And it wasn't until, I believe it was the, I want to say the MTV Awards or the, it wasn't the Oscars. I don't think they were nominated for an Oscar, but the MTV Awards where the people from the movie, the actors, were presenting an award. And we're like, wait a sec.
They died.
Wait, I thought they were dead. We found out it was in fact not real. So that's probably where it all stems from in terms of found footage. That one for me is the biggest one that sticks out.
So we could probably all agree that most found footage films are horror based, films, right?
Yeah, horror or thriller, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say
you don't see a lot of comedy found footage ones, but
I'd say probably my favorite of the found footage that's been made over the years, and certainly I've in terms of, I guess, like the horror genre, it can be a campy. Monster movies have always been one of my favorite kind of type of film to watch.
Titanic? Just kidding. That was a joke.
That's ugly monster. like I always love Godzilla and you know, kind of like King Kong. I found Cloverfield to be such an exciting film to watch.
Another sort of unique style, right?
Yeah.
Like when you consider the kind of sci-fi aspect to it.
Oh, very much.
It's believable to a specific point where you start watching it, you're just like, wow, there's really something going on out there. And then, but then you got to think like, how the hell did they do that? How did they do that with an entire city in the background?
Yeah.
You know, and then all this destruction is happening.
Well, J.J. Abrams was the director that obviously got that movie made, and he's known for making epics like, you know, the Star Trek movie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible.
I love his movies, actually.
When the trailer came out for Cloverfield, it was a really intense trailer because they're all at this party and you see this explosion happen, and then all of a sudden you see the Statue of Liberty's head hit the Chrysler Center and then come rolling down the street.
Yeah. like towards the camera, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that? Yeah.
It was such an exciting trailer to watch. I was super excited to see the movie, and I was not disappointed. It was such a fun film to watch.
It's been years since I'm gonna have to check it out
while.
Again. Yeah,
it's been a while for me too. I'll admit, but I did see it and I did like it.
And it's not, like I said, it's not always a horror film. Like you have movies like Hardcore Henry.
Oh yeah, I love that movie. That I would argue that's not so much a found footage film as it is sort of a first person perspective film.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Although very creative way of making it. Have you seen it, Hardcore Henry?
No.
I think you would like it. It's an action movie. It's basically this guy, we're seeing his perspective, and he's using like martial arts to like fight guys and also guns, and but it's all first person perspective.
Okay, yeah.
It's like taking a GoPro and mounting it on his eyes and just like,
right.
Oh, it's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I remember seeing trailer for it here or there, but yeah.
It's a fun one. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Another, like I said, going kind of not necessarily horror, but it had still the thriller side was Chronicle. We were talking about that a
little bit. Chronicle. Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
That one's a mixture of probably found footage and kind of first person in some aspects. It's not necessarily first person, but it's not all kind of found footage either.
It's very creative way of doing the found footage aspect too. Like giving these guys the abilities that they have, like superpowers basically, but they're recording themselves doing all these cool things and but then it has sort of a twist to it all, and almost like a one guy turns maybe bad, and yeah, like it's fun. It's
maybe
a fun movie. Yeah, maybe.
But it kind of put
you have to watch to find out.
Kind of put Dane DeHaan on the map in terms of his.
Yeah, I agree.
His acting.
He's chops. A talented actor, actually.
Same with actually, what's his name? Guy
Black Jordan.
Pan, Jordan B.
Jordan B.
Oh, Michael B. Jordan.
Michael there B. Jordan. Yeah.
Jordan B. Michael.
Yeah, Jordan B. Michael.
Jordan B. Joe.
Yeah, and that's obviously, you know, superhero genre
totally. Kind
of line. So it's a great film in that aspect too. Again, if you're not looking for horror, look for these kind of films where they're still intense and
yeah, there's like
evolved.
All sorts of fun styles. For me, it's the action. The thing, if you can do an action movie with that kind of first person perspective, like we talked about Hardcore Henry, that's a fun kind of idea, right? And I really enjoyed that one. Is there a movie that you can think of, like that you have in mind that we haven't discussed?
Yeah, so I'd actually like to pinpoint one movie, because I have a feeling you guys may not have seen this one. But it's great, and it's a horror movie. And then I think we should maybe talk about Paranormal Activities.
Yeah,
that's
right.
How can you not talk about those?
Security
when you talk
footage,
about,
really, right?
Well, like, yeah, when you're talking about found footage and stuff,
for sure.
Right? There's a movie, I know what it's called, I don't know why I'm looking it up. It's called As Above, So Below.
Okay. Okay.
So have either of you guys seen that?
I think I've heard of it. Never I don't think I've it. Seen it though.
So basically this is a movie based around the catacombs in Paris.
Ah.
So basically the entire system underneath the city, right? And it's an architect student that heard a rumor or is investigating or writing a thesis on the catacombs or something like that. And they find like this, not vigilante group, but kind of this group of explorers, but they're known criminals.
Yeah.
But she basically hires them to take her through the catacombs because they've been down there so many times and they know kind of the routes and stuff. And it ends up being once they get into the catacombs, they find out that this section they've gone to, these people actually haven't been to.
Mm.
And so what it does is the point of the movie is I won't give you specifics, but I'll give you an idea of how it runs. It's like a reversal.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you go down to go up.
Right.
Kind of thing. Like you have to go deeper down into the...
Feels like Memento almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And what it does is throughout the movie, there's different scenes where there's different things that are happening. Where you get through an area and you kind of go around a corner and then there's something else going on.
Right.
But each scene is like the ultimate fear of one of the people in the party.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of plays out. Or it's either that or it's like something that traumatic that happened to them in their past. And they basically have to relive it. It's absolutely terrifying.
Wow.
I'm getting goosebumps thinking about the movie. Because it's one of those where it's one of those terrifying things where, you know, they'll pan to the person with the footage. And they're looking at it. And just the look on their face. You just feel the fear.
That's cool.
You just look at them and you go, oh my God.
That means
what happened in your life that made you look like that? Because now I'm starting to get, I'm fearful and I don't even know what's going on.
That means they're good actors, right?
Yeah.
They're obviously performing well.
I don't know if it's on a streaming service or not. I have no idea. We're not sponsored by anybody.
Yeah, we don't need to promote anybody.
But if you can check it out, I would. It's really good. And it's bone chilling.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. No, I think you're right. A lot of that sort of genre of movies tend to be kind of the horror, scary type movies.
Yeah.
Or thrillers or what have you. But if you, like you say, if you can get an action in there too, I think it really kind of adds that twist. And I think that's probably why I like, you know, Hardcore Henry so much, because it's so unique in terms of the idea and stuff like that. But
we're looking to talk obviously about Paranormal Activity, and that's, you know, that's looking at the kind of like, I guess, the spiritual side of things. Movies like Quarantine or REC or VHS, it focuses more on infections and like almost like zombies and stuff like that. It's kind of, I like that intense kind of film just in regards to watching like a zombie film, whether it's, you know, World War Z or, you know, even
28 Days Later.
28 Days
I think
Later.
Of that when it comes to that sort of loose style of filming. Most of that was because of the budget, though.
So, like, when you're seeing it as kind of found footage, it has that much more of a intense kind of, okay, what's going to happen next kind of thing, you know, compared to, like, when you're watching kind of a regular film, you kind of almost expect it.
Yeah,
to a certain extent. So, but I think looking at the horror side, going on more of the spiritual side, like I said, you know, demons, ghosts, and stuff like that, Paranormal Activity is probably top.
Oh, so scary. So scary.
Have you guys seen all of them?
I've seen the first four maybe.
So I think the fifth one, which is called The Ghost Dimension, is actually the scariest.
Isn't there a new one coming out recently? Like,
I'm not sure if there is.
No, I can't remember.
Yeah.
We're actually running out of time, gentlemen. So
yeah, fair enough.
Just one more thing to wrap it up. If you want to talk about anything else with the genre.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think even though the Blair Witch kind of broke in with that found footage style, Paranormal like set itself apart.
Oh, yeah.
As like a new found footage kind of style.
It's hard not to fall for it, right? When
you
consider the amount of stuff that's out there that people talk about and show their own security footage of like, oh, look at this thing moving on its own and stuff. Like,
The one thing I found with those movies in particular, specifically the first one, is the way they incorporate sound.
Yeah.
And how they make all your senses tingle, totally. Right? The way they do it, yeah.
Now, I wasn't very scared, to be honest, of the Paranormal Activity movies. I thought they were kind of dumb in some aspects, but I understand the the appeal of why they would be scary. One under the cuff one that I would recommend if you're again looking for kind of that kind of spiritual demonic kind of horror film. The Last Exorcism is a found footage one, and yeah, it's the whole idea is it's meant to be hokey and kind of stupid in regards to the guy, the exorcist, that's trying to do what he does, and then at the very end you kind of get that twist, and it's actually kind of an intense twist to the end of the film. Yep. It's actually one of those ones I would recommend.
Very nice, gentlemen. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of the Puck and Pod. I want to thank everybody for watching. If you aren't aware, you can watch us, of course, on Rogers TV, locally here in Nanaimo and, of course, the Vancouver Island area. But, of course, you can check us out on YouTube as well. And you can also check out the podcast anywhere you get podcasts. That's, of course, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. And, of course, we're available on YouTube as well. And you can also check us out on any of the social medias that we have, TikTok, Twitter, or formerly Facebook. X, formerly Twitter, and Facebook, and Instagram, and you name it, we're there. Just look for @thepuckandpod.
Click once subscribe.
Again, that's right. And click subscribe. That's right. Once again, for the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.